Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner. I am your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, broadcasting every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., rebroadcasted every Thursday at 6 a.m. on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brunel, Brunel University, that is. Delighted to have you with us today. And also delighted to have with us Julissa White, student manager of WBCX-FM, who is pinch-hitting for our regular program producer, Christina Rhodes, who's also the general manager of the station. Julissa, we're delighted to have you here with us today. Appreciate your taking care of all those technical arrangements that I'm glad I don't have to do myself. You know, every time we experience a weather calamity, and gosh, pretty timely to talk about that now. Every time we experience a weather calamity, such as a severe ice storm or thunderstorm, or in other parts of the world, floods and hurricanes, one of the things we worry about is losing our connection to what's really happening out there in the real world outside our house. We get very distressed when our cable TV goes off, and maybe we don't even have radio access because of a power failure. And certainly, under the most severe conditions, we won't get our daily newspaper for several days. Maybe it's under circumstances like these that we have special appreciation for how the mass media have streamlined and enriched our lives. At very little daily cost, we can keep up with what's developing in other areas besides weather, politics, sports, entertainment, the stock market, history, travel, comedy, food, fashion, biography, and so much more. But as much as we value the mass media, shouldn't we ask these penetrating questions now and then? What's the quality of what we see, hear, and read? Are news items reported fairly and accurately? How can we judge that? What is left out of the story that might have changed the story? After all, these media voices and written words have powerful influence over the way we view our world. In fact, as I said that, I'm reminded of a speech that Spiro Agnew made in 1969 in Des Moines, Iowa, in which he took the press to task. He said that many opinions were being broadcasted and written about by what he called a non-elected effete group. He said about them that they were nittering nabobs of negativism, which became a very popular phrase. He said it's about time that we started realizing that these people have more power to influence you than even the federal government itself does. Well, today we still hear questions about the media. What are the major trends in mass media that we all need to be aware of? To answer those questions and others, we've called in an expert as our guest in the Communication Corner, Julie Clay, Assistant Professor of Mass Communication at Brunel University. And Julie, one factor I noticed as I was reading your background that gives you special qualifications regarding mass media is that not only have you earned relevant degrees in that area, and you're teaching in that area here at Brunel University, you have compiled an impressive record of practical experience that supplements your advanced degrees. In fact, that's something that I really love to see. I'm a former university professor myself, and one of the things that I always felt was important was that the person who's in the classroom teaching something should have done that themselves at one point. Otherwise, it's only armchair theory. So it's my privilege and my pleasure to welcome our mass media expert, Julie Clay. Julie, welcome to the Communication Corner.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Delighted. And let's begin right where I left off, and that is talking about how you learned firsthand what it's like to deal with the media, even to be a part of the media, and how, of course, that has prepared you to teach media relations. Now, tell us a little bit about your fascinating background before you became a faculty member at Brunel University.
Sure. I think I've always adopted a philosophy of being prepared to be lucky. So we never know what's going to happen tomorrow. We never know what opportunities we may be presented with, but we always need to be prepared to accept those opportunities when they do present themselves. So as a student at Auburn University, War Eagle.
War Eagles had a great year this year.
That's right. I got involved in as many campus organizations as I could, and anytime there was an opportunity to volunteer on a campaign, volunteer with an organization as a student public relations consultant, I took advantage of those opportunities just to expand my experience and get prepared when bigger and better opportunities arose. I began a master's degree because I was still in Auburn with waiting on my husband to graduate, and decided to take advantage of that time. I didn't know how or when I would use that degree, but thought it would be relevant and useful. My career took a sharp turn when I entered the area of event planning, and the first experience I had there was with a sports and entertainment marketing firm that produced large charity golf tournaments, pro-am golf tournaments. And in doing that, I got to work with the press on organizing pre-event materials, and then work with the celebrities on getting their information out. And it was just a wonderful being thrown in feet first experience to working with the media.
And yet, of course, one of the things that you were always having to be aware of when you're dealing with golf tournaments is the elements that can come in that you've got no control over, such as, hey, Julie, we planned everything really well, but too bad we've got thunderstorms forecasted for the entire day.
Absolutely. And with the first golf tournament that I did, being in Alabama, we are certainly used to those unexpected thunderstorms. More importantly was the human element that we had to be prepared for. When you get a lot of rowdy celebrities mixed with a party atmosphere and fans, you have a lot of human catastrophes that are possible as well. And so you have to be prepared for really anything and be ready to act when anything happens.
And then as an event planner, you do find out as well, which all media people know, is that I think it was Ross Perot that made the comment famous, the devil is in the details. Until you have planned a major event which involves the media, you just have no idea how many minutiae go into making an event successful, or sadly, on the contrary, can make it unsuccessful.
Absolutely. I learned that quickly when we had gotten, again, at the golf tournament, because this was my first taste at the real world of event planning. We had gotten garbage cans for everywhere along the course, and no one had thought to get any type of liner or bag or anything for those garbage bags, and it just never crossed the important to-do list. So we were out running trying to gather enough for all of the garbage cans. And it's those details that could make or break an event.
Well, if you don't mind me mentioning the Georgia Bulldogs, here you are, an Auburn fan, but I'll tell you about an event several years ago at the Georgia Stadium, which talks very much about the importance of details. Georgia has not played a great many night games, but of course, when you play one, you have to have the lights on. I remember maybe about 5 years ago, there was a night game that was to start at 7:30 or something like that. And around 6:30, I turned to people around me and I said, shouldn't the lights be on by now? And before long, everybody started clamoring because the lights weren't on. And just before the teams came out for warm-ups and they would have been falling all over each other, somebody cut on the lights. We found out the next day that the person who was responsible for it didn't know it was their night to do it.
Oh, wow.
So it had to be delegated very quickly. You had to find a rescue effort. And in the media, such as you're dealing with, there cannot be any lack of coordination or responsibility. Somebody has to take care of every detail. I mean, for example, on a television broadcast, we're talking about lighting. What if a light bulb went out, or a chair collapsed? They're just all kinds of calamities that you must prepare ahead of time for. And I like your definition of preparing to have good luck. I heard one time that the definition of good luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think from an organizational standpoint as well, that speaks directly to having a media relations plan. And you always have to be prepared. If there's one thing that I say more than anything else in the classroom, it's we have to be proactive rather than reactive. We need to have that plan in place and know what to do when the person that was there to turn on the lights doesn't show up. We need to have that plan B in place and have that plan established and practiced. During 9/11 and prior to 9/11, there was a security officer with Morgan Stanley, which was the top floor of one of the towers.
Yes.
At the World Trade Center. And it was a man by the name of Rick Rescola. And he had thought that there could be some crisis in the future after the garage bomb at the World Trade Centers. And at that point, established a crisis plan. If anything were to ever happen, this is what we're going to do. And he made the entire staff practice that program frequently over those few years preceding the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Some of the people were probably thinking, gosh, this is a waste of time. Why are we doing this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So he met it with some, aggression from the employees. But even the CEO was not exempt when he said it's time to run the drill. The CEO had to get off of that call and run. As a result, they didn't lose one person that day. They practiced it. They knew it. They knew the escape routes. They knew everything because it wasn't practiced in the tragedy. It wasn't practiced in the calamity. They knew what to do, and so they had that plan in place, and that's what we have to do. We have to be prepared and be proactive.
Let's transfer that from the media itself. Let's transfer that to just any company or any organization out there. Every company need some type of media relations plan. You cannot assume this is never going to happen to us, because as soon as you assume it's never going to happen to us, next thing you know, you can be a Columbine High School, or you can be an area in Tucson, Arizona, where there was just a standard, ordinary meet the public with a politician. You don't know. You can't predict. In fact, one of the things I do when I teach crisis communication seminars is that I always say to begin with is nobody plans emergencies. And my next statement is we wouldn't have any if you plan them.
Exactly.
Who wants emergencies? So every company must have a media relations crisis communication plan, very much like this official at the World Trade Center office, Morgan Stanley office, had the foresight to say something can go wrong and we must look at it. We're going to take just a minute here. Jalissa, would you remind our listeners, please, who they're in tune with and who our terrific guest is today?
Okay, then here is a reminder that you are listening to the Communication Corner with your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brunel. Today, he is hosting Julie Clay, Associate Professor of Mass Communication at Brunel University. She is sharing what she has learned about mass media through her professional experience in the marketplace and her academic studies and teaching. Stay tuned for her comments about radio, television, and newspapers, which we all depend on every day.
Thank you, Jalissa. Well stated. Getting back to organizations needing a crisis communication plan, I'll share an experience of mine very briefly. I was at one time vice president of a college in charge of development, public relations, alumni relations. I can remember so well, Julie, it was Palm Sunday and Easter weekend coming up. The president of the college called me into his office a couple of days ahead and said, I'm going to Illinois to be with family. Do you mind being in charge for the weekend? And I'm thinking, Easter weekend, nobody's going to be around here. Nothing can go wrong. Certainly, I'll be glad to do that. Friday afternoon, when my office closes, I go home, I start relaxing, and in 30 minutes, the phone rings. The person on the phone tells me, you really need to get over to the administration building immediately. Well, to make this story as brief as I can and give all the details, one student had been shot fatally. The reason the student had been shot was that the people that he had been selling drugs to didn't like the price, and so they came back to protest. A fight ensued, and they shot the student to death. They also shot his live-in girlfriend. Well, my task was, first of all, to deal with the media in such a critical situation. And then I'll never forget the next morning when the father of the young girl came to the hospital, and I had to meet him there and explain to him what had happened. He had just heard that she'd been hospitalized. He didn't know what was going on. Well, from that moment on, that college designed a plan, nobody had to just take it in, as we say, shooting from the hip like I had to do. Believe me, they got a plan. I say that having a media relations crisis communication plan, the person who doesn't have it, the organization that doesn't have it, I compare them to the guy or the lady who's going to the dentist one day, and they say, well, you know, I haven't flossed or brushed all year, but I'll do that tonight because I've got a dental appointment tomorrow. Tell me a little bit, tell our listeners, please, what should be in a crisis communication plan? What should be spelled out in it and shared with the organization, as you've suggested, in training sessions?
Absolutely. I think one of the most important things is to understand that a media relationship must be in place before you ever begin. The last time that you want to call the media and ask for their help or ask for their coverage or their sensitivity with such a serious issue is when you're in the middle of an issue. So you need to establish those relationships early on.
And so when you call them, you don't want them saying, Julie, who?
Exactly. They should know exactly who you are, what organization mm-hmm. you're with, and you should have been working together in the past. That is certainly a vital part of any public relations plan, but specifically a crisis plan. Additionally, you need to know who to contact. You need to have that phone tree, to put it simply, in place. Who do I contact when this happens? Who needs to be alerted? You need to have the basic facts of your organization. The first thing that the media is going to want to do is give some history, give some background, some context to their viewers of where this happened. And so you need to have that information available and ready to give out.
And one thing that's absolutely imperative here is that you hold nothing back in the information.
Absolutely.
Give the full facts, because any time that you're holding something back, It indicates, rightly or wrongly, that you're hiding something, you're trying to cover something up. This gets the media representatives very suspicious of your motives and therefore of your integrity, and your ethics, your credibility goes down the drain. So immediately make sure that you give all the information that's needed. And as a part of that, very relevant, how should someone handle a tough question? I mean, I know our tendency is to say, well, no comment, but what's the downside of answering no comment, Julie?
Sure, and I think you hit the nail on the head. No comment a lot of times gives the impression of, I don't want to give you a comment, not that there is truly no comment. You know, in the South, we have the saying, it's always better to air your own dirty laundry. Mm. And so when we give the information from an organization, we get to decide how it's said. We get to decide how it's framed. And so it's important to give information. People want information immediately. That's the society we're in. We can pick up our phone and look at it, the internet. We're inundated with information. And so the idea of, when we gather information next week, we'll give it to you, is no longer acceptable. So there's a fine line between getting that information out quickly and making sure your information is accurate. And so I think buffering anything you say with, new information is coming in constantly, we're uncovering the details of this event, but we will let you know everything as it unfolds. Right now, here's where we are, here's what we know.
So you are not being evasive when you say that. For example, there are times when you don't know the full extent of the damage, the
Absolutely.
Loss, or whatever. In fact, what would be the danger, Julie, if, let's say, there were a fire here on the Murnau campus. And the officials were asked, even as the fire department is here putting out the fire, the officials are asked, well, what's the dollar damage here? And what's the danger in giving an estimate like that?
Well, I mean, I think we can look at events like the George Bush, Al Gore elections, right? We give information too soon, and it's not always correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we have to backtrack. It makes the media look inadequate, that they're presenting information that's incorrect. It makes the people represented look inadequate because they didn't give correct information. So I think in those situations, a good answer would be something like, right now we are concerned most with the Brunel family, with our students and our faculty, making sure everyone is safe, that we found alternate accommodations, whether it's office area or living space. That's our primary focus right now. Over the coming days and weeks, we'll be assessing the financial impact to the university. And then address it as it comes out. Don't offer that information and then never follow up. It's important to close that loop as well.
Yeah, you can't promise something and not deliver it.
Absolutely.
But saying that you're going to do your homework, that's just a natural part of it. Of course, I'm thinking, too, if you give a dollar estimate, you've got the problem there that has already been stated. What are the insurance people going to do about that, for example? And then, naturally, one thing that you cannot do, you cannot release the names or even the numbers of fatalities until family members are notified.
Have been notified. Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And so it really is about being responsible and being ethical in our reporting, both from the organization standpoint and the media standpoint. Again, it comes back to that relationship. If the organization has had a good relationship with the media is going to give them a bit more leeway and allow for a bit more sensitivity than if they've had no relationship or a poor relationship in the past.
Let's talk a little bit about building that relationship with the media. For example, it could involve in inviting them to important events at your organization. Maybe you're dedicating a new building, or you have a new mission plan, or you're introducing new board of trustees, or new office, there's a change in administration or whatever. If you have the media in on these events, I heard an old saying one time, if you want me with you on the crash landing, I got to be there on the takeoff.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so it's establishing that relationship. It's offering to be a resource to the media when you don't need anything in return. If you're always taking and never giving, you're having you're going to have a difficult time when you do need something from the media.
Another important point here is making certain in a crisis situation that everybody in the organization knows who is authorized to speak to the media.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those command titles need to be addressed and be part of that plan. Who you go to for specific parts of the plan or pieces of information. Obviously, you want all of those people involved. That's why we look at PR and the communication function within an organization should be a management function. It shouldn't be somebody that's not part of the planning all along that's called in at the last minute for that Hail Mary pass at the end of the game. It needs to be somebody that's been a part of the entire planning and the organization and the culture. And when that happens, you have a bit more cohesion in these times of crisis.
Yes, and another thing is not only knowing who are the official representatives of the organization in a crisis communication situation, it's making sure that others know that it's very much out of place and it's very dangerous for them to comment. An illustration here would be, let's say that there has been a shooting at a bank, and the press calls, a receptionist answers and says to the reporter, gosh, we do need you over here. We got a real mess. This is something I don't know if we'll ever overcome here. And, you know, that's something kind of naturally in a state of frenzy, excitement, and disaster that somebody could say. But it could dissolve, destroy very quickly all the bounce back that the organization is trying to do constructively.
And that's when those training sessions are critically important. I have three small children at home, and from the time that they could walk and understand basic commands, we've started telling them, this is where you go if there's a fire. This is how you get out of the house. This is where we're going to meet up. This is what we're going to do. And so we've run through that drill. We've practiced so that when the event happens, God forbid it ever does, they know exactly what to do without thinking. And we can't expect that receptionist at the bank to know what to do if we've never told her what to do. And so we've got to train everybody and make sure everyone is on the same page and knows what to do when those events happen.
Let's talk a little bit about the press conference that might take place. Some people think, well, we don't really need to plan that press conference. We'll just show up and wing it and answer their questions. That opens you up to all kinds of potential mistakes and misstatements. Those really do need to be carefully orchestrated, don't they?
Absolutely. And here we run into kind of a catch-22. We want it to be very rehearsed. We want it to be very well known and understood by whoever will be presenting the information. But at the same time, we want it to sound natural. And we want it to sound sincere and not like a canned message that we're giving everyone. And so that takes practice. That takes rehearsing. That takes truly knowing and digesting all of the information about the organization. But it also takes the planning of the small details. Where are we going to have a press conference if we need to? Where's a room that's big enough?
What handouts will we have for
exactly.
the participants?
Exactly. All of the little details that you have to be ready for. Other things, if it's going to be on television, if it's going to be printed in a newspaper, we have to think about our appearance and what we'll look like when we do present that information. We want to look human, and we want to look natural, but at the same time, we need to seem professional.
And confident.
And confident. Right. And so for men, that means putting on that jacket, not going out in a T-shirt. For women, it means putting on a suit or having on something very professional. Wearing colors that are going to be effective when they're presented on television rather than coming out in white and appearing washed out and just not having that sense of confidence and believability. I love the quote by Coco Chanel when she said, every day before I leave the house, I take off one piece of jewelry so I don't look like I'm overdoing it. And that's something we need to remember. We don't need to be showy. We still want to be human and natural, but professional and respectable.
One final comment about crisis communication. We have done our training ahead of time. We've got everybody in sync about who the spokesperson or spokespeople will be. We have others trained not to get into discussions, especially public discussions. We've worked up a statement. We've rehearsed. We've done well for a press conference. We've answered the questions honestly, completely. We haven't been evasive. If there's more information to get, we will get it. There's one thing that I think it sort of puts the icing on the cake, and that is when this is all over, to stay in touch with the media after that, weeks afterwards, because even then rumors can be flying about what really happened. So this fine relationship that you established with the media and that you capitalized on during the crisis, Julie, we can use that to advantage later on as well and continue to say, here's what's happening. Here's the repairs that were made. Here are the legalities that are taking place. That's a good step, too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's a very important step. If we've already established that relationship, we have that ongoing communication, it's only natural that it would continue afterwards. We had it before. It's only natural for it to happen afterwards. One of the important things to do, though, is to look at it from the media side and how far you let that relationship go from the media perspective. How can you still be fair if you have these relationships with certain organizations? And so that's an important issue from the media side to remember as well.
Well, as a result of our conversation on this part of the topic, and we're at the halfway point in the Communication Corner, As a result of this, you and I hope that organizations will take seriously the need to prepare for emergencies because, as I said before, nobody plans emergencies. Otherwise, we wouldn't have them. Jalissa, remind us, please, where we are, and then we'll take a short break.
Here's a reminder that you are listening to the Communication Corner with your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, on WBCX 89.1 FM, The Voice of Brenau. Today, he is hosting Julie Clay, Associate Professor of Mass Communication at Brenau University. She is sharing what she has learned about mass media through her professional experience in the marketplace and from her academic studies and teaching. Please stay tuned for her comments about radio, television, and newspapers, which we all depend on every day.
You're listening to 89.1 WBCX, The Voice of Brenau. If you have a suggestion, comment, or request, call the studio at 770-538-4744.
Extraordinary lives from Brenau University.
6 months ago, I got blindsided by my company. They called me in, laid me off, and sent me packing with just 2 weeks' severance. Walking out that door, I said, this will never happen to me again. The first thing I did, enroll at Brenau University. The economy may be in shambles, but at Brenau, I'm putting my career together in time for the recovery. Today, I'm earning my degree in business so I can start my own. The first test of my business savvy, choosing a school as reputable and affordable as Brenau. With my Brenau degree, I'm ready for the next chapter in my life, the extraordinary life.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online, register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on The Voice of Brenau.
My name is Jamali Rashears, and this is how I live United. Education has been so important in my life, but lots of kids in my community don't have the same opportunities. I'm an advocate and fundraiser for my local United Way. I help promote academic achievement and give kids a reason to stay in school. We also put together events to raise funds and bring our message to the kids that need to hear it most. My name is Jamali Rashears. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors and their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
I don't know about you, but I just love books, and there's thousands of good, used, gently handled and loved books available at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market Building on the square in downtown Gainesville. Next Chapter Bookstore is operated by Our Neighbor and offers housing and opportunities for men and women with disabilities. If you need more space for some more loved books, you can donate as well. Bring them by and they'll be glad to help you. Look for more books and good books at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market on the square in downtown Gainesville.
Hi, I am Ricardo Boyer, host of Embracing Health. Every Friday at noon, we talk about various topics related to your health and well-being, empowering you to make positive changes in your life. So, join me Fridays at noon here on 89.1 WBCX, The Voice of Brenau.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Welcome to the second half of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, broadcasting every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., rebroadcasted at 6 a.m. for those who start their day quite early around here. Today we have Julie Clay as our guest, media expert. We have spent the first part of our program talking about a variety of topics, focusing mostly on having a good crisis communication plan. Julie, the next way I'd like to tap your expertise is to ask you something that has really been puzzling me, and that is, why is it when a television network has something which seems to be going so well in a format, why do they get away from it? And I'm going to give you two examples that truly grate on my nerves. Number one is headline news. In fact, they no longer call themselves Headline News. It's HLN. When Headline News started, every viewer knew that wherever you were, at whatever time of day, if you had access to Headline News, if it was 3 a.m., you could get a 30-minute recap of the news. You didn't have to go through a lot of other distractions. Well, now, Headline News is no longer Headline News. In fact, at 11 o'clock in the morning, they take a break for what's going on in Hollywood. And then from, what, about 6 o'clock in the evening, it's a variety of voices and faces on there, most of which have nothing to do with news. The other example to me very blatantly is the Travel Channel. There were times watching Samantha Brown where you could get such a great vista of places all over the world as you traveled with her as your host. Now I call it the Travel Food Channel because it's almost entirely on exotic foods. Really, I can mention one other. Sometimes I see the History Channel going off on strange tangents, such as what ice truckers are doing. What's your opinion on why this happens?
Well, you know, I have to first think that we've seen this trend for really about 20 years, and the first being MTV, right? There was a time when MTV actually played music, because it was music television. And so you could turn it on and you could see videos of bands playing music. And now it's a collage of reality television. And so we've seen that kind of stick its dirty little hands into every channel now of changing everything. I certainly think we follow trends. Right now we have definitely dethroned the media. We've taken the power away from the celebrities and the media as a whole. And now we see these celebrities and these media personalities as our friends. Everything is reality, is real TV. We want to just talk to our friends on television and not seek them as a source of true information. So now we're seeing this trend of talk shows, of gossip television and things like that. We don't
the Glenn
want them
Becks,
to be
the Dr. Laras.
Absolutely. This idea of infotainment, that we can't just get information. We need to be entertained as well at the same time. And so that's what we're seeing now, I think. Now, the Travel Channel, that one bothers me as well. It's interesting that now our food trends have permeated into every channel. I love that now the cupcake is apparently the most important food group because every channel has some show about cupcakes, how to make them, how to sell them, competitions with them. So it is interesting, and it's interesting how that will progress as we continue to take away power from the media.
You remind me so much of what Walter Cronkite, of course, and you've probably quoted this to some of your classes. During his long prime as a broadcaster, he was known as the most trusted man in America. In reading Walter Cronkite's autobiography, which I encourage people to do, there's one statement he made in there which was quite prophetic. He said, at one point when television news started, it had very little to do with entertainment. He said, now as television is progressing, I'm seeing more and more entertainment rising to prominence. Walter Cronkite would be very appalled now because he truly predicted that there's a dangerous point in that it could become what you've just said so well, Julie, infotainment. And instead of being able to find our news every 30 minutes, we're going to find instead Joy Behar interviewing somebody or Dr. Oz or Oprah and so many, really a proliferation of talk shows, so that we no longer, as you're suggesting, don't let me read you wrong, but we no longer have authorities. As you say, we have friends on the air, we have personalities, we have celebrities, and in many ways that has watered down the potential quality of news.
I think it definitely has the potential to dilute the seriousness of our news. And, you know, that takes us back to having those relationships. How fair and balanced, as Fox News puts it, is a news station if they have these established relationships.
Fair and balanced, the sub-slogan on that, we report, you decide.
Exactly. And so they clearly don't say that they report fair and balanced, that you decide what is going to be your fair and balanced interpretation. But the media has an obligation to be the invisible journalist. And now we want them to be our friends. We want their personality. We want to see all of those things. And so they're at a crossroads of how do we remain invisible? How do we report only the news, but still get the audience, still get you to buy in? We're seeing now the I report on CNN, where anyone can put their news on. You know, students think that Wikipedia is an appropriate source of information. And again, it's a place where anyone can post the news. So I think as just Americans, we have a sense of entitlement. What I see, what I perceive to be true is true. Their perception is reality, and they think it should be everyone else's reality as well. So the media at some point is going to have to take a stand that either we are information or the news media, that is, either we are information or we're entertainment. But the mix makes it confusing, I think, for the audience.
Here's a comparison I'd like to make. You're a university professor. And to me, you have to strike a balance yourself. You can be friendly with the people that you're instructing, but you are supposed to be the authority. You are not supposed to be just a chum, just somebody they go have coffee with. Now, it's nice to go have coffee with students. It's nice to have that friendly relationship. It makes it possibly a greater likelihood that they will be open to what you have to say academically. But you yourself, along with every instructor, cannot just water it down and be one of the guys or one of the girls, can you?
Exactly. There are some people who do find that balance really well. Historically, we can look back at FDR with his fireside chats, right? He was still the president of this country and the leader of the free world, but he drew people in and showed his human side. More recently, Tom Brokaw was amazing at doing this. He was an extraordinary broadcaster and was able to present information, but when tragedy hit, you certainly saw the emotion in his reporting of those events. And so I think there's a fine balance. I think right now the pendulum has swung a bit too far in the entertainment direction, but there does need to be a balance. We want to see them as human. We want to know that they're not just a robot, reporting what someone will have them to say, but that they are reporting what's important for us to hear. And so we need to find that balance again.
Do you think that Paul Harvey had that balance?
Absolutely. Paul Harvey, I mean, what could you even say about Paul Harvey? The closest thing I can find now to get a taste of that type of reporting is on CBS Sunday Morning, where they certainly show the feature side of it, the human interest side of it, but they present it in just an extraordinarily unbiased way. And I don't think we see that enough.
Okay, Jalissa, we're having a wonderful conversation here with Julie Clay, Assistant Professor of Communication, Mass Media at Brenau University. Tell us who our fascinating guest is going to be next week, please.
You'll want to be with us next week as Dr. Bill interviews Dr. Ken Frank, Chairman of the Department of Humanities at Brenau University. Professor Frank will explain what's involved in conflict management, conflict resolution, mediation, and negotiation. These are vital skills for both professional and personal success. So be sure to join us again next week in the Communication Corner when Dr. Bill Lampton interviews Ken Frank, 9 a.m. on Tuesday.
Thank you, Julissa. Notice she said Dr. Bill, not Dr. Phil. He's you can get him someplace else. All right, continuing our discussion of mass media. One of the beefs I have with the media, I've been very honest about, is that they take a format, they please the public with it, they draw the masses in, and then they change the format. And I think you've put it well that they have drifted more into what Walter Cronkite would call the entertainment side. Something else that I would like your professional opinion on is, should the media pay so much attention to crime? Now, it's expected, of course, that when you're talking about an Atlanta, an Augusta, a Columbus station, when television comes on, it's quite natural and it's quite traditional for them to talk about fires and train wrecks and car wrecks and thefts of grocery stores and even murders and attempted murders and other crimes. That's expected. But is that where the national news should be? I know once or twice I've been watching a major network. I don't need to mention which one because they're all doing it, but I've been watching a major network and they say they're in the middle even of talking with some international political or government figure, and they say, wait, we interrupt this program for a special announcement, and they show where a train has been derailed someplace, or they show where there is a fire, or they show where someone is taken hostage in a bank or whatever. And it seems to me that the national media have greater responsibilities than that. And one other problem there related to that, in my opinion, is that too many people now might be tempted to do some copycat crimes because all of a sudden today I'm not known to anybody. Tomorrow I will be on every network. People will know my entire background, my photo. I'll get interviewed. Maybe even 20 years from now. After all, I was just reading yesterday about the Charles Manson case from 1969. They're still talking about those people. Instant fame, perennial fame. How do you respond to this seemingly escalating focus on crime by the media?
Absolutely. I think that the media has a responsibility to report the news, something that is going to be impactful. They have a responsibility to report. So if a lot of people were impacted on that train wreck or in these situations, they do need to report that information. And so we do see that. I think it's very interesting that one of the local Atlanta stations has just launched an entire campaign about how they're restructuring their news to focus less on crime because so many people had complained that there was such a high focus on the negative and the scary. I think people want to feel safe with where they are and want to think that their neighborhood or their town is safe. And so I think we get a certain amount of comfort knowing that these things are happening somewhere else and in other areas. I think that gives us a certain amount of comfort and control. From the media outlet perspective, I think that there's a great fear of if we don't report it first or if we don't report it at all for that case, what will people think of us? Will they still see us as a viable and reliable source of information? Especially now when you can just turn on the internet, you can go to these 24-hour news stations and get updated information all of the time. So no one wants to seem irrelevant or out of touch, and so there is that connection. In terms of the copycat crimes and that sort of thing, I don't know that it's creating more criminals. I think it may give a muse for someone already teetering on the edge. And I don't know that I would call it celebrity as much as notoriety.
Yes, but, that's better. That's better.
There, you know, I don't know that it's going to create the monsters, but it certainly provides a muse for them when we're giving too many details and too much graphic information.
We talked a little bit a couple of minutes ago about how the television media is getting more and more input by people taking something with their camera and sending that in, and all of a sudden it's on national and even international television. We could also mention YouTube while we're on that, because
absolutely.
YouTube, think of Ted Williams a few days ago, who was standing on a street corner, exit to from a freeway in Columbus, Ohio. He was spotted and filmed by a broadcaster. Next thing you know, how many hits was it that YouTube video got? It seems to me it might have been 40 million.
It went viral very quickly, and the next morning he was actually a featured guest on some of the morning news talk shows.
Yeah, he was shuffled from one to the other.
Right.
Right. Okay, so people can get that exposure in television. Now, one way in newspapers that people have been able to have their voice for a long, long time, and it's highly respected, is writing a letter to the editor. In fact, I have to admit that when I look at pick up my newspaper, yes, I look at the sports like any other guy, but one of the things I do look at very early, I look at the letters to the editor, because this is what people around me are thinking, and often I'll know some of the people. Let's suppose, Julie, that I want to write a letter to the editor, and I want it to get published. What are some of your guidelines that you would give on that?
For anything that has to do with the media, the best tip I can give you is to begin to immerse yourself in the media. Read, write, watch, whatever it may be. But start to understand what is acceptable in whatever publication that you're trying to be published in. Start to learn the format and things like that, so that you have a better chance of your voice being heard. And then practice writing. They certainly do not want to publish something that sounds unintelligent, that is difficult to understand because of grammatical errors and things like that. So certainly get in the practice of writing, and then be willing to edit and be willing to make corrections and that sort of a thing. In terms of the issue, write about something that you're passionate about. If you become someone that's sending in a letter to the editor every day because you don't like this billboard and you had a bad sandwich at the sandwich shop and this and that, you become more of a nuisance than a voice. And so you want to make sure that the topics that you choose to write in about are things that you're truly passionate about, and that you need your voice to be heard.
Not only that you're passionate about, but would be of public interest too.
Absolutely.
And then one other thing, you do have to be conscious of an appropriate length. You can't send in 10,000 words. Many newspapers on their editorial page will suggest how long the letters can be. One thing that most newspaper editors that I've talked to will state is that they retain the right to edit letters for two reasons. One, for length, and, well, maybe three reasons. A second one, for any profanity in there. And then third, even for punctuation and grammar, especially grammar. Punctuation is more of a nuance individual. But if there's terrible grammar, they feel that they don't want that in their newspaper. So if a person thinks, I'm going to write something and it's guaranteed to be published in full length and exactly as I said it, that may not be the case.
Right, and now there's even a trend towards this idea of blogging and microblogging in the media. I know that with this ice storm, the four major news outlets in Atlanta continued to say through the process, please visit us on Facebook, post your pictures, tell us how you're surviving, tell us, you know, stores that you've been to that may be out of materials and things like that. And so we've gotten to a point where you don't even have to write a full essay or a full letter. You can write, OMG, the snow is bad, on Facebook and be heard to some extent. So we're definitely given more options now than we've had in the past for communicating with the media.
Well, it's kind of like texting has that texting language has gotten into the other media.
Absolutely.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, for sure.
Okay, now we've said something about how to get a letter to the editor. Take a minute or two and tell us, well, what if we want to go beyond that and we want to become a bylined columnist?
Again, I think it's truly studying the art of writing, not assuming that because you keep a diary that your writing is worthy of being published for a mass audience, but understanding that people that are featured in print publications have spent a lot of time honing their craft and really becoming proficient at what they do. So a lot of it is practice, finding your voice, finding your tone and your angle and your style of writing so that people can begin to identify with you. We follow columns because we identify with the columnist. We follow Dave Barry because he is a format. He is a very identifiable writer. And so begin to hone that skill, begin to decide what your voice is, and again, write about things that you're passionate about.
One thing we ought to do, we've talked a good bit about television and newspapers. We've talked a little bit about radio. One of my favorite descriptions, and I don't know where it came from, I wish it were original, but I know it's not, is that radio is theater of the mind. Mm. What does that mean?
Unfortunately, I think that we're getting away from this, and so I think a lot of your younger listeners may not even be able to really relate to this, but it's the idea that we get to hear the words, but we get to fill in the spaces. We get to fill in the gaps with the pictures that we want and decide what we want our broadcasters to look like and what they're talking about, and it leaves a lot to our imagination, so it's the excitement of reading a book and being able to decide all of your characters, but then getting to hear it and having the sound effects and all of that. I think that Prairie Home Companion is one of our last great radio theater
Garrison
programs.
Keillor.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Those who happened to grow up before television and depended entirely on radio. Radio was a family event, just like TV became a family event. People gathered to listen to some of the more popular programs. I know, thinking back myself, there were a lot of years where I heard football games, but I didn't get to see them. I got, as you're saying, a picture of what was happening. And recently I was telling someone that in many ways it had an excitement that you don't get with just being there visually, because you could feel the crowd, you could sense what was happening, you could picture the plays and so on. Julie, amazingly, we're down to our last minute or so. Is there anything you would like to say to sort of pull this together as far as the impact of media trends that you're seeing, whatever?
I would think since most of your listeners are probably not professional media personnel, the most important thing is to become an educated consumer of the media, not to take in what is said as the gospel, but be ready to do your research and become an educated consumer. Know what you're getting and process that accordingly.
Julie Clay, you're a fascinating, informative, lively guest.
Thank you.
We really appreciate having you with us, and we warn you, we're going to invite you back again. Next week, as Jalissa mentioned a little while ago, we're going to have a highly informative and relevant interview with Dr. Ken Frank, chair of the Department of Humanities at Brenau University. We'll be talking about conflict management, conflict resolution, relevant to us both individually and as companies as well. Reminding you to go to my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. On my blog, you'll find a photo of me and Julie Clay together. You'll find a description of our broadcast today, and you'll also have the full audio of the broadcast itself. And as you go through the Complete Communicator, you can find other broadcasts there as well. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. Call me, 678-316-4300.